Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. The digital age provides wonderful opportunities to connect, but also big challenges, in particular for parents and their children. Consider this scene from the Judd Apatow movie, This is 40. The two main characters, a husband and wife, played by Paul Rudd and Leslie Mann, try their best to talk to their teenage daughter about spending less time online and more time outdoors.
You need to get outside more. Do some playing outside.
Yeah, you can build things outside. You could build a fort outside.
What?
Yeah, build a fort. Play with your friends and have...
Make a fort outside? Yeah. And do what?
Have little...
Do what in the fort?
When I was a kid, we used to build tree houses and play with sticks.
Nobody plays with sticks.
Nobody plays with sticks, but everyone plays with laptops, smartphones, texting, sexting, and online social networking, all of which can take over young lives and disrupt family relationships. So says clinic psychologist Catherine Steiner-Adair, who points out that kids from ages 8 to 18 spend more than 7 hours a day tethered to their electronics. Her new book spells out the risks and offers families practical advice on how to disconnect from their machines and reconnect with each other. Catherine Steiner-Adair is a clinical psychologist and instructor at the Harvard Medical School. Her new book is called The Big Disconnect, Protecting Childhood and Family Relationships in the Digital Age. And welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming in. So at the heart of the big disconnect is this paradox about what's going on in the digital age. On the one hand, we're more connected than ever before, but there's sort of a dark side to all this, right? So tell us what it is.
Well, we're more connected, but we're not connected in the most meaningful or essentially human ways. Mm. And we've lost some fundamental ways of connecting overnight, it seems like. Like texting has now replaced tone of voice in talking. And teens will say, oh, I would never call somebody. That's so intense.
Yeah. So how are parents contributing to the problem? I want to talk about sort of from the parent side and then from the kid side. How are parents contributing to the problem with the way they are using their smartphones and their computers? What do you see out there?
Anthony, one of the most moving things to me in the process of interviewing over 1,000 kids from the ages of 4 to 18 and even college and young adults was the consistency with which kids of every age said they are exhausted, mad, sad, have given up on competing with their parents' attention, trying to get their parents to get off their stupid computer or when they pick them up at the airport coming home from college, actually stay in a conversation with them. So there's a kind of relational fatigue that kids are talking about when given the opportunity of trying to get their parents to be there for them when they need them to be. Mm. They don't need it 24/7, but there are some serious times in a child's day where they need our full attention.
Mm. Meanwhile, tell us what's happening on the kids' side. What are they doing that is contributing to this that the parents need to be a little more vigilant about, in your view?
Well, starting with parents, when parents are unavailable because they're doing their email, when left to their own devices, kids plug into their own devices. So that's one situation that parents really have to be mindful of. There's a real trickle-down effect.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that's so scary, honestly, is that kids don't need their parents in the same way for information anymore, for help with homework. They can go anywhere online if parents don't have filters or have set appropriate limits with their kids. So kids are really turning to screens in some ways, you know, sort of a tech parent in a way.
Mm. And what is the danger of this? And I know we can talk about kids of various ages, but let's first talk about the littlest kids. A two-year-old, for example. I know this from personal experience. I can actually get my two-year-old to quiet down for a couple of minutes at dinner by putting the iPhone in front of him with a song on it, right?
Right.
I read your book and I feel terrible that I've already done that. You've made me think hard about the wisdom of it. But what are we doing to our children when we do that?
Singing would be a lot better yourself. The thing that about a screen is that what you're really trying to do is calm your child down and deal with the frustration of having to sit at the table.
Yeah.
And listening to a song isn't the worst thing in the world. it's certainly better than playing Angry Birds or some, you know, pinging, tapping, bleeping, screen-stimulating thing. But screens are stimulants, and that's the biggest difference. Listening to music auditorily calms you down. Listening to music with visual stimulation, particularly if there's an interactive thing that the child can do, is a stimulant. So instead of teaching your child to calm down, deal with frustration, soothe themselves.
Yeah. It's funny. I mean, when I read that, it almost seemed like a paradox to me, because I think as parents, we're thinking that we're giving this to our kids to calm them down.
Right.
But you're identifying it as a stimulant and therefore sort of counterproductive to what we want to accomplish with them.
Yeah. I think, you know, there are some things that are soothing on screens, more soothing certainly than others. But the other thing that you're doing is you're teaching a child to lean on a device rather than lean on themselves and develop that internal voice that says, it's okay, calm down, we're almost done. And that's the first challenge as a parent, is teaching your child how to deal with frustration and soothe themselves. And technology can help in that transition, but it does not teach them how to calm themselves down.
On the other hand, you're sympathetic to parents who resort to this, right?
You get
what's going on. Right. In fact, I wanted to ask you about that, because you write about your own experience. I know your son is all grown up now, but what did you experience?
I had a horrible time with this. Yeah. You know, our son he's 28 now. He was a total instant adapter to computers, really gifted in some ways with computers and love computer games. And we had a very love-hate relationship with it. I loved how great he was doing and how, you know, he could help all his friends get to the next level and all those things. And I hated how hard it was to get him to have regular family time, how hard it was to get him off a game to come to dinner. It took me a while to understand that setting a time limit on certain kinds of games is really not realistic as a parent. It's better to wait till the weekend and let your kid accumulate time so they can really get into the strategy built into a game.
So saying something like 20 minutes a day is the limit, not a good approach.
Well, I think you really want to think about how old your child is, what you want, what other things you want them to be doing. Do they really need to be playing video games during the school week? I don't know if they've done all their homework and if they transition on and off. These are really important considerations. But the most important one is that screens are interfering with other things children really need to be doing and other kinds of play that actually are essential for children, especially younger children, that technology does not involve.
Mm. Listeners, we're talking to Catherine Steiner Adair. She's the author of The Big Disconnect, Protecting Childhood and Family Relationships in the Digital Age. We'd love to hear from you. Have you figured out how to set limits on screen time in your family? What questions or comments do you have about all of this for Catherine Steiner Adair? Give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. We've been talking about smaller kids. You also write about children being adultified, sort of ahead of their time, I guess, by all of this. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Well, children, by the time they reach middle school, have always wanted to join the more adult teenage or adult world. That's sort of what growing up means, connecting to the dominant culture. And what's happening is kids can connect to that culture at a much younger age. And they're being exposed to images and storylines and content and material that psychologically they are not old enough to handle, but they are certainly old enough to mimic it and to use it. So I've been involved in many situations in schools around the country where really good kids at 10 or 11 or 12 have used adult content, really disgusting, vitriolic, sadistic sexual content, to get back at a kid for payback for, you know, criticizing them for their poor grammar in school. You know, so the weapons of social dynamics are adult ones. And, you know, we hear tragedies about these, like this most recently, this 12-year-old child who took her life. But the point here is that these are tools, and they're powerful tools, and they are remarkably wonderful tools when used correctly. But 10, 11, 12-year-olds are having access to things that they really are not, and as well as 14 and 18 and 30 and 40-year-olds sometimes.
So your book is full of some great advice to families and to parents. And I wonder if we could just start talking about it. And I wanted to actually to get you to read just a little piece. On page 119, you have the beginning of sort of what is a manifesto about how parents should think about this. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I think it's 191.
191. I appreciate that. And yes. It's this idea that, hey, this computer isn't yours, right? Mm-hmm. This is where it begins.
Yeah. Well, parents tell me they often feel lost and confused about how to set limits on a computer. So this is the basic message that I would say. First of all, this is not your computer. I know it has your name on it, but this is my computer, or it is your school's computer. And I am your parent, and I reserve the right to see everything that's going on there. You need to be on the computer in an open place. I have the right to know what your homework assignment is. You can't be in your room with the door closed. You can't take it to bed with you. You can't collapse a screen when I walk by. We have a code of conduct, and we expect you to stick with it. Don't be mean. Don't lie. Don't embarrass other people. Don't pretend to be someone you're not. Don't go places you're not allowed to go. Don't post pictures that grandma wouldn't love. And don't do anything I wouldn't approve of.
Hmm. So pretty basic, but mm-hmm. firm.
Mm-hmm.
But a challenge, I have to imagine, for a lot of families, right? Big challenge.
It's a huge challenge.
So I'm sort of thinking of that cut that we played from the Judd Apatow movie, This Is 40, where the teenage daughter is just like, what are you talking about? And yeah. If there was even better tape before that scene where it's like, what do you mean limit the Wi-Fi? What are you crazy? Mm-hmm. So what's the answer to that?
Well, not to buckle when you get that kind of pushback,
right.
Particularly if you haven't set any limits. You're still the boss.
Right.
You are in charge. Hold on to your parental authority and hit reboot. Just say, we are having a family powwow. Guess what? We've blown it and we're starting again.
Mm.
Here's how we're going to go forward. And let them hate you. They're going to rant and rave, and they can tell all their friends that they have the worst, strictest, meanest parents in the world. But I will tell you, that in the focus groups I did and in my work as a therapist here outside of Boston, kids really appreciate the limits and they want the limits. And they may not thank you at 12, but they certainly will later on.
Listeners, you can join this conversation. We're talking with Catherine Steiner Adair about her book, What Questions Do You Have? The Big Disconnect is the name of the book, Protecting Childhood and Family Relationships in the Digital Age. 1-800-423-8255. Let's go to Anna, who's calling from Somerville. Hi, Anna. You're on the air.
Hi, hello. Thanks for getting my call.
Sure, happy to do it.
I have a 5-year-old. I'm a single mom, and, you know, like, I work, and I usually pick him up straight from school, and then I need time to cook and do all the stuff in the house, so it was easy to, like, just give him the iPad,
mm-hmm.
and he would play and not call me all the time. But now, like, he doesn't want to eat. He doesn't want to do anything. He doesn't want to go out. I take the iPad away, yeah. and he has a tantrum for, yeah. like, an hour. He cries.
Mm-hmm.
He throws a fit. And, like, I really need to read this book. I don't really have a question, but I
No, I think you put, like, actually, that. Anna, I think you put a good question on yeah. the table. And my question is, what should Anna do?
Anna, I so get your situation. I think what's happened is your child, like so many kids, has almost become dependent, if not addicted, to the fun and the thrill and the neurological interaction of the stimulation of the iPad. It is so gratifying. What I would recommend you do is take it away, talk to him, and very slowly reintroduce it and say, you have to show me that when I hand you the iPad and we set a timer and the timer goes off, you can hand it back to me without crying. And I would space it out over days. I would not let him do it every single day. Let it be something that he does in a limited way and demonstrates that he can actually handle going on and off the iPad. And the other thing that you have to do, of course, is make sure that there are Legos and some other stuff for him to play with, because he needs to rediscover his own natural curiosity, his own ability to create play. If he says, I'm bored, just hang in there with him. Don't cave, because boredom is really sort of a little anxious, frustrated moment that kids need to learn to work through and to get, if you will, to the next level of their own playing. And you'll reconnect him with his inner little five-year-old who could play very capably without an iPad. But you have to wean them, and it'll be tricky, but you can do it.
Anna, thanks for that call. And Catherine, I'm struck by something that Anna said. She was talking about a five-year-old, but she mentioned the idea of an iPad, which brings to my mind how this challenge goes beyond just the decisions and choices that families make. I mean, there's this craze, it seems to me, or we're getting close to a craze about iPads in schools. And, you know, they're essential pieces of teaching technology that the kids come home with. So it's almost like the schools are complicit in this idea that you've got to be connected all the time.
Well, you know, there's a lot of tension in schools today. And the tension in many school systems comes from parents saying, you're not giving our child the best education if they're not in a one-to-one situation and they should have laptops. And there is still a lot of research out about and still to be done about the effects of learning on laptops. Some kind of learning is extremely well done and more funly learned, and skill drills on laptops are great. However, with every new device that a school sends home with a child, they have to, at least 3 months before, give the parents a huge amount of coaching about how to introduce the device, what the rules are going to be, what the parameters are going to be. All middle schoolers should talk about use of the laptop, what it's for, what it's not for, well before it comes home. There's a wonderful resource for this on the website Edutopia, and it's if you go to edutopia.com, there's a suggested laptop agreements for middle school families out of the Nueva School in California, a school I work with, that I think is fantastic. Mm. And it is a 6-page list of conversations to have in advance of the laptop coming home. There.
Say that website again. We'll try to get that on our website at radioboston.org.
Edutopia, EDUTOPIA.com. Right. Great resource.
Let's take another call. Mary is calling from the South End. Hi, Mary. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, happy to do it. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm listening to this, and I'm just cheering at the words about parents setting limits. And I've been reading so many articles recently, and the reaction I have is, why aren't parents just being tougher with their kids? Mm-hmm. Because I just will not allow my kids to have a computer or a TV in their room. I think that's nuts. They won't get any sleep. I have both of my children, one's an eighth grader and one is a fourth grader, and they both got iPod Touches, which I didn't realize essentially function as little TV sets. You know, I think
yep.
They're doing that more than listening to music. And once I realized what was going on with the devices, I basically have a rule where those devices are, if they are not on the mantle where I can see them by 9 o'clock at night, then they lose them for a week, mm-hmm. and there's no court of appeals. That's just it. So my eighth grader is at Boston Latin, and, you know, her 9-year-old brother had put his there. Hers was not, so it was gone for a week, and it didn't matter what she said. I said, well, you didn't have this device last year, and you managed to function perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. So,
well, Mary, thanks so much for bringing that no court of appeals view to the table. It's an important one. Let's go to Kathleen, who's calling. Oh, wait, no, go ahead, Catherine.
Well, what I want to say is, what a great example of
yeah,
setting limits, and
absolutely.
You're really clear about your parental authority here. And one of the things that I think is very clear about you is you're very clear for yourself. You're managing this in yourself probably mm-hmm. just as well. And one of the problems is that adults are all addicted, and our screens tap into this kind of to-do, want-to-get-it-done, fun, gambly, shoppy type part of our brain. And once we're plugged in there, it's very hard to self-regulate for grown-ups. So often they get sucked into their own screens, don't want to have the fuss, don't want to set the clear limit, don't want to say, okay, it wasn't here, you know the consequences, it's a week. So, you know, good for you.
But are we running the risk here of making it all sound bad? For example, this morning with our staff, we were talking, I was talking with some of my producers, one of whom is a parent of another 2-year-old, and she made the case that there are some apps that seem to be doing a very good job, you know, teaching him letters, teaching him, you know, these kinds of things, and sort of giving him almost a running start on this kind of learning.
This is a huge misunderstanding about what a running start for a 2-year-old looks like. Kids can memorize letters, but What a two-year-old really needs to do, much more than memorize their ABCs, is be read to, develop language, be physical, play outside, play inside, sort of develop what's called the sensorium. It's part of the brain that requires kinesthetic movement, creative play, social-emotional interaction. And when you give a child a laptop or an iPad or a phone or a screen, it's such a limited form and a very limited way of learning. So you're developing one aspect of a kind of intelligence, but ignoring four others that are very important. The whole idea that knowing your letters before you get into kindergarten puts you ahead is really a misguided thing. The most important skill or tool, if you will, that a kindergartner needs is social and emotional intelligence. You can catch up on letters, you can catch up on numbers, but it's your ability to calm yourself down, manage your own emotions, play nicely with others, sit and tolerate frustration, listen in circle time. And kids who are given iPads really quickly have a much harder time listening to being read. You know, we see those funny YouTube videos that are not so funny of a kid banging on a book because
it's a dead screen. Expecting it to respond like a screen. Yeah.
So all issues related to attention, language development, creative play, and social interaction are not deeply developed at this age on screens.
Let's try to get at least one more call in here. Terry is calling from Newton. Hi, Terry. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
Hi. I just had to point out that you have somewhat of a contrary view, and it's something that I have been thinking about a lot in the last 6 months. But we homeschool our kids, and we really have decided to not have fear about technology whatsoever. I have 2 7-year-olds and a 5-year-old. And, you know, we have allowed our kids to kind of deep dive on their laptop computers, but I know what they're doing there, and I have a great opportunity to dialogue with them because I'm watching what they're doing. I'm not handing them a computer and walking away. And my children have done amazing things on the educational side from just experiencing their computers. And I think a lot of this is fear-based. It's fear-based because many of us parents didn't grow up with technology. And it does.
Well, Terry,
you
put a couple of ideas on the table, and I'd like it to get Catherine to respond in about the minute or so we have left. Is this fear-based? But it seems like she also talked about something very important, and that is she supervises what's going
there
on
there. There is fantastic educational content and creative opportunities online and on screens, and the homeschooling community really taps into this wonderfully. But you are supervising what your kids are doing. They're not on social networking sites. They're probably not watching trash YouTube videos, etc. So supervision is one keyword here. Educational is another keyword here. And you use the phrase diving deep. And when kids use intellectual opportunities and educational opportunities to dive deep into academic interests online and online fan fiction groups and online creative groups, whatever it is, online learning, this is wonderful. I'm not trying to spread fear at all, but I am saying let's all push pause and think about what are the safest educational, really creative ways to use computers, and what are the ways that screens of all kinds are coming between us and really hijacking aspects of our child's childhood, hijacking aspects of our family's healthy connectedness, real relationships, hanging out, having fun, which can include computer games sometimes, and how to keep our kids safe in this new age where there are no boundaries on screens to protect childhood.
Well, Catherine Steiner Adair, she's a clinical psychologist and instructor at the Harvard Medical School. Her new book is called The Big Disconnect, Protecting Childhood and Family Relationships in the Digital Age. You can read an excerpt at radioboston.org. You can also post a comment there about anything you heard. Catherine Steiner Adair, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
And listeners, stay with us. Coming up, our Common Health segment. Good communications between doctors and patients can sometimes be difficult, but often your health depends on it. Stick with us. That's coming up next. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.